Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Talking Sports Plus. My name is Dr. Lorenzo D. Smith, and I'm very excited about having the opportunity to come before you again as the host of Talking Sports Plus. We are in the year of 2018, and I hope everybody had an awesome holiday and had an opportunity to spend some time with their family. So, in essence, I am very excited about having my co-hosts with me, all of them here, except one of them that will be coming in a little later, but we're going to have all of them here tonight. And we look to have a spirited show tonight, a show that's going to focus on sports in the historical black, among the historical black colleges, high school, and middle school athletics in the southeastern part of the United States. So before we get to move on into Father, I just want to say to each and every one of you, whatever you plan sold in 2017, you will have an opportunity to reap that in 2018. That's coming from the team at Talking Sports Plus. Let's move on with the show. Let's introduce my co-host, and I'll start off with Coach Lauren D. Smith. We want each of you to say hello, and then we'll get started with our show. That's Lauren D. Smith.
Good evening, listeners. I'm excited to be back with you in 2018. We have a lot of big things planned, and I'm ready to get started.
Okay, thank you, Lauren, very much. We also have Coach of the Airways, Darrell E-Train Elliott.
Hello, everybody. Let's get down to talking to all of the people out there now, and let's go to work on Talking Sports.
Awesome, awesome. And our newest member of our team, and we're so glad to have him. He's been a guest expert on the show, but he's going to be working in 2018 with us, and that's Coach Tremaine Edwards.
How y'all doing, fans, listeners? Y'all stay tuned. We got some hot topics to talk about. Y'all stay tuned with us. Let's get it started, Coach Smith.
All right, sound like a winner. And our other co-host who had an appointment that's going to have to push him back a little bit, but I know he's going to call in, that's Coach Tony Stallworth. All right, let's get started with our topics for the new year. And really, before we do that, I want to make sure I give that basic information about what we're doing here and how to contact us. Our call-in number for our talk show is a new number now. Before, we had a producer that was working with us, but we move in a direction that we want to produce the show, and we're producing it at another area. So the call-in number is 347-857-4192. And I actually call us while you're on the line. If you want to add to the conversation, press 1, and I will identify you with the last 4 digits of your telephone number, and then you will identify yourself by telling us who you are and your location. Our web link is www.blogtalkradio.com/LDIBertusSmithProduction. So we're looking forward to hearing from you, looking forward for looking on this board to see that you're listening to us. So we're very excited about it. So, team, let's start off our format tonight talking about the basketball classic. Some call it the Magic City Classic on the hardwood between Alabama State University and Alabama A&M, which was held last Saturday, January 13. Do we want to kind of share any thoughts on that from each and every one of you?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Alabama State came out with the win against Alabama A&M, and I'm just going to state my honest opinion. I was really shocked seeing how Alabama State had been playing. But as we all know, when you come down to rivalry games, it can go either way, such as the game tonight against Alabama and Auburn. Games can go either way. You never know. But I must say, as an Alabama State graduate, I was very shocked seeing I had been to an Alabama State game, and I really did not believe they would beat anybody in the sweat based upon what I was seeing. But as the season progresses, every team gets better, and I'm really happy to see this team right here get better. In my opinion, it wasn't too good in the beginning, but I believe they might. I believe they'll get it together. No, might.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Coach. Anybody else want to add to that?
Yes, sir. Being an Alabama A&M alumni, I was really upset at the game. I thought we were a little better than that. I would say that. We have a young team on the hill this year. I feel like that we started too slow. Started real slow and made a good hard push towards the end. But I think with a little more grit and good in the beginning, I think we could have pulled it off on the Hornets and stole one in Montgomery the last weekend. That's all I got for you right there.
I tell you what, I'd like to hear Daryl E. talking. I'd love to hear you guys talk about the teams, HBCUs. In fact, you know, Bama State, and Coach Lauren is right. She saw an improvement there. And I'm just happy to hear you guys talking about it, because the reality is that, let me just be honest with you. Bama State going to take it, y'all. We just going to do this thing, as we always do. Just want to highlight y'all on that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, I attended the game. I was there. Now, let me kind of put my input in there. I watched them on television, talking about Alabama State as well as Alabama A&M, and I kind of saw that there was a little bit more continuity between Alabama A&M and Alabama State. I really thought from the preseason game against Auburn University at Montgomery, which I saw Alabama State compete against, and they beat them by 1 point. But until now, and what I saw the other night, I tell you, I was surprised. I was totally surprised. As Coach Lauren said, I was surprised, but I saw some things out there. They was hitting threes, and if they hadn't hit those 10, 11 threes to start the game off, it may have been something different. But I also applaud Alabama A&M for not giving up. They fought until the end. A matter of fact, I believe that if a play would have went one way or another way in the last 10 seconds, Alabama A&M would have stole that game here in Montgomery. But
you know,
I applaud the Alabama State University. I applaud them because the team didn't quit. They played at a high level, even though they was up in the first half. They was up by 24 points at halftime. That's the lead they had. And A&M was able to whittle it down where it came down to a last shot to win the ball game. And however, the A&M was not fortunate enough to hit the last shot. So I applaud both schools. And as Coach Darren is saying, we're going to talk about historical black colleges, and especially when you said the Magic City Classic. Even though it's not in Birmingham, it's at home-to-home basis on the hardwood, is what we want to make sure we share with you all and continue to support those universities at what they're doing. So we're very excited about the historical black colleges and what they're doing. There are many other schools doing other things, and slowly as the season progresses toward our playoff, and we'll start bringing more information about historical black colleges on the hardwood. All right, we have anything else you want to add to that?
You know, Coach Tremaine Edwards is right, though. A&M did get started in the second half, and if you really look at first half scoring versus second half scoring, Bama State, they failed to the defense of A&M, but it just wasn't enough for A&M to come back and win that game. But truth is, A&M scored 39 points in the second half to Bama State's only 22 points. So it was a defensive game in the end, and with some offense coming out. But once again, go Hornets, my friend. Go Hornets.
That's all right. That's all right. Okay. We want to kind of – part of our format is always the Coach's Corner. And we always pull some topics out and talk about coaches, some of the things that occur within a athletic program. But before we move to doing each one of our topics, I want to again give out our call-in number, which is 347-857-4192. And if you want to be a part of the show and add this to this candid conversation that's going on, press 1, and we'll identify you by calling out your last four digits of your phone number. And then you will tell us who you are and where you're from. So we want to make sure we let you know that throughout the show. All right, the first topic of discussion, and I'd like to get some talk on this, or get some discussion on this. And this is what effect does the early college signing period has on high school and college football, positively or negatively? Negatively.
Well, one thing's for sure, Coach Nick Saban says it's the early signing, you know, it's in December. That's when they kick it off. And he says for him, it puts emphasis on recruiting while his team is trying to prepare for bowl games, which potentially, of course, suffers them with staff attrition. So that's one con of on the con side of early signing for a head coach is attrition and the fact that they're trying to concentrate on bowl games, keep these kids settled down, and you got these recruiters saying, hey, come on in with us. You know, so that's one thing.
I really don't like it. I'm going to be totally honest, because I'm around kids all the time. I talk to kids all the time. And a lot of these kids use this this break, this Christmas break, really to go view campuses and do things like that. So basically, in my opinion, you got kids now that say, okay, well, I can sign early. Okay, I sign early. Cool. I go to a game such as, we saw this happen last year with Henry Ruggs III. Henry Ruggs III had offers. Yeah, cool. It was straight. But he didn't pick up bigger offers until after he played in the Army Bowl. When he played in that Army Bowl, he got more offers. Now, mind you, if we had the early signing period last year, Henry probably would have signed early and never got an opportunity to visit other campuses. So that's all. I'm saying I don't like it, because I feel like you're putting pressure on kids, and it's a distraction to the kids at the university, because now their coach is out recruiting, and they're not spending time preparing for bowl games and possibly preparing their team for championships. So I don't like it. I think it should go back to February commitment.
I'm going to put my input in it. I think it puts a lot of false hope in coaches. When you're in the early signing period, the stars aren't way out yet. They're still looking at, you know, is he a 4-star? Is he a 5-star? Like Lauren said, when it deals with those, you know, all-star games, it depends on your performance playing with other 4- and 5-star athletes. So I think it puts a lot of false hope in coaches. So a potential 5-star kid goes out there playing with other 4- and 5-stars. If they don't perform well, by the end of the year, they will drop. So I really think it puts a lot of false hope in kids. Like I'm looking at the rankings with kids right now with Georgia, you know, Georgia at that one spot. And I'm looking at the amount of 5-stars that they have on their team, the amount of top 300 kids they have on their team. I really think it's a lot of false hope in those kids, man, because I really don't think they are that good. And like the people say about them, that the 24/7 sports, when they're finishing, you know, judging the kids, it's a lot of kids that are going to go up, and it's a lot of kids that's going to go down. That's all I got on.
And that's awesome. Some good discussion on that, because as we listen to the talking pundits, I call, or the talking heads, they talk about how good it'll be for the students to be able to go sign and get that pressure off them, and then they can go play the game. But it also expedite the time to recruit. Evaluate. You know, one of the things I applaud all of the university for evaluations. And if people are not aware, and I'll take Nick Saban and his process. He goes through a thorough evaluation of these players to the point where they actually have to come on the campus some point and go through a process of evaluation. So before he make a decision, so I think when we're looking at the pressure that's being put on the schools now to make sure you get that player, but it also forced that young person to start making decisions. Excuse me, a little bit earlier, where if he had until February the 7th, which is the official signing day, the one where it'll be official for all the schools, he'll have some time during the holidays, because it's kind of hard during the holidays and not be able to, you get a week or so off to go spend time with your family. I'm talking about at the college level. In high school, it's the same way, because it's Christmas time. And you're trying to enjoy it, but you pressured to make a decision by this past year was the 20th through the 22nd. You would make a decision, and sometimes it might not be that right decision. For example, like you said, the university or the schools that are at the top, probably if the process went on, I might can't fit in there. They might have people come back, I can't play there, but I'm going to go on sign because it may not be a scholarship for me. And see, that's the pressure that's on our young people. If you don't sign by the 20th or the 21st, you're holding me hostage now, because you're going to fill that spot with somebody else. And that concerns me in regards to our young people, and it also put a lot of pressure on school, not only just the college but the high schools as well. So that's something definitely we like to discuss and continue to discuss. This was changed in the last meeting of June 2020. The summer meetings or even the spring meetings for the NCAA, they decided to move to an early signing period like they do in basketball. I don't think everybody's aware. There is an early signing period in basketball, which is in November, and they do their signing. But it's a little different in basketball than football, because basketball will be just starting up, whereas you really sign it early. And have, you know, with basketball, without playing a season, whereas in football, you still playing in your season. You're in the playoff time. So that's something we should be considering. But this is new. It's here. I don't know how long it's going to stay, but we're discussing it because we think there are some positives and some negatives to this. So it's up to the talking pundit or the talking heads and the pundits. And I keep saying that because they're the ones that sometimes talk about it. Sometimes those people are the decision makers up at the top to make that decision. All right, let me get some thought on our next topic, which is did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right?
I want to give you some bar stool conversation on that, Coach. Daryl E. talking. You know, not that it matters, okay. But I thought OSU was going to be in. You know, their victories over Penn State, Wisconsin, and Michigan State are all better than Alabama's victories, not to mention the Big Ten championship. LSU may be better than Michigan State, but I'm not convinced. To me, it's a, you know, coin flip. Same with Mississippi State and Michigan State. Either way you put it, Ohio State has two better victories than Alabama. You got to look at that. What it seems to come down to, in my mind, the committee, well, it was Ohio State's 55-24 loss over Iowa, I believe that was right. And OSU can't complain all they want to about the committee not varying their conference championship. But it could have been all solved if they had showed up against Iowa back in October. Now, the beauty of college football, every week matters. You got to show up every Saturday, and if you don't, it could bite you in the butt. But at the end of the day, I'm going to say, Roll Tide. Go ahead, Coach.
I believe that the committee did it correct. When you're talking about, okay, I said the committee did get it correct, but I had a problem with what are we considering the four? Are we going to consider the four best teams? Because the four best teams could be two teams in the SEC that are the best teams, and you got two Big Ten teams. Boom, that's the four best teams, but that's not fair to everybody else. That was my problem right there. Then I had my other problem was, okay, so we're going to say, cool, we got that right. But are we going to say the teams that were undefeated, the teams who had one loss, The teams who had a conference loss, the teams who had an out-of-conference loss, teams that lost early, teams that lost late. What are we considering as the college top four? That was my whole problem. And I was on the internet going, having an argument with people because, in my opinion, we're going to say the four top teams, you got to put UCF in there. Okay, they haven't played anybody. Whatever. They're 12-0. Well, they were 11-0, 12-0. You got to give them some kind of recognition. And a lot of people say, well, they went to play Auburn in the Peach Bowl. Auburn is crap. That really doesn't matter. They should, in my opinion, they should have been given another opponent to see, okay, are they top four? Whether, how did they get undefeated? That was my whole problem with the four. I didn't understand if we were talking about four best teams minus the record. We just talking about the four best teams, or are we talking about the four teams who have the best record? That was my whole argument with the college football committee.
I'm gonna say this. I think that committee did get it right. You gotta reward teams for their play throughout the season and getting to the last game and losing the game because of injuries. I'm gonna say that, and I'm speaking in behalf of Alabama because that's where all the controversy is. When it came down to the decision between Alabama and Ohio State, I didn't even think it was close for those two teams. Because if you're doing what they're saying, watching the way they played all year, it wasn't close. And you're looking at the reason why they're losing. And that's because of injuries on the defense. Now, as far as Ohio State, that loss to Iowa really hurt them. Now, if Iowa had won a few more games, I think it would have benefited them a little bit. But other than that, I think the committee got it right.
And kind of let me add my two or three cents in it, and it's good that we all can share our opinion. I truly agree where I think the committee, and I feel like the committee got it right, because all of the criteria was there, but the one that was most important, it was the one saying that we're going to look at your total body of work. We're going to look from day one all the way down to the last ball game, conference game, or championship game, whatever it was. We're going to look at how you, when you started from the beginning. Now, one of the things that kind of concerned me when we're talking about comparing Ohio State, USC, Alabama, and there was maybe another team in there, when they said that 5-8, was that when the chairperson of the CFP came on, stated that those teams was razor sharp, close. That's how close they were. My problem with that is I do think that the number of losses you have, I don't care who they took, puts you out of the picture sometimes. When you got two losses, and somebody else got one loss, and they playing the same equal. When I say equal schedule, if you're playing the schools that are in your division, you may have some teams that come in the FCS, but if you're playing at that same level, you're playing at least 9 or 10 games of Power 5, I think that if you have two losses and you got 8 teams in front of you, one loss, I don't care who you beat, you're just not considered in to be the four best team. Because you can't throw out the two losses that you have. You can't throw the two out. If you throw one out, you still short because you got one more than the other team that had one loss. So I think they got it right. But that was proven in the end. And just let's kind of move to that anyway. Share some thought, team, in regards to the championship game between either simply the two games, the semifinal and the final between Georgia and Alabama. We want to talk about that. Let's talk about what we thought about that. What's your feeling about how the championship game was played? What you think of any game in the playoff? Share your thoughts on that team.
I can be honest with you, Daryl E. talking again. It was amazing the guts that and you guys may disagree with me, that the guts that Nick Saban had to change quarterback. I think that they keyed so hard, Georgia did, on the running pass from Jalen Hurts. They did not expect, I think they called, I can't even say his name, Tutu. I just call him Tutu. when he came out, it completely disrupted Georgia's defense because they didn't know, they didn't prepare for this young man. And while they played good defense, Alabama was able to pick them apart at the very end. And those are my thoughts on it.
Nick Saban, yeah, it's a good fool, but when you come in a game such as this and you're that close, in my opinion, the game was still close at halftime. It was. When you're that close to winning and you see you have someone on your team who is not getting the job done, do you sit here and say, oh, well, he's been my quarterback all year. We're going to keep riding with him, and he's making nothing happen offensively for you? Or are you going to say, hey, this kid can move the ball up and down the field, and that's what we need? My team took a lot of guts for Nick Saban to say, hey, son, we're going to have to go with Tugaloa right now. So, yeah, Tugaloa. That took a lot of guts. A young 17, 18-year-old kid to come in and say, hey, I want to win. This is team before me, and I'm going to make sure this team gets a win. That's amazing. You don't see many freshman guys that put team before me. He didn't let any of his mistakes get him down, because if y'all know he did throw a decision in the game, that didn't affect him mentally. At that point, it was more about team. Let me put this team on my back and let's win. I think Alabama has the bright future for the next at least 2 years. I'm excited to see Georgia as well. Georgia has a freshman quarterback, same I'm ahead in the game. I think it's going to be a good year for the SEC next year when it comes to Alabama, Georgia, LSU. Florida should have a turnaround year. Auburn should probably be the same. I don't see them getting any better unless they get some receivers. It should be about the same. Same results.
Okay.
I'm going to say this about that game. And, you know, I say this because I talked to Dr. Smith almost the whole game. I've been saying this for a minute with Tua at the quarterback position. It went so far as the experience. What I liked about Tua is he gets rid of the ball. That's point blank. I felt like Jalen Hurts went stagnant with the ball. A lot of games, ever since the, I'm going to say as far back as LSU, I feel like he just don't give us a chance when he doesn't check down. But if we get a guy in there that can check down, we're a whole new team, man. And I think Nick Saban just ran into that wall where we got to do something to get the team going. Like, the team morale was dead. At the halftime of that game, team morale was dead. But when Tua came out, I just told Dr. Smith, I said, they got to change him. Now, me and him was arguing about it. He was like, Trey, why would they change him if he got him here, Trey? I said, we're not going to win with him. And when they came out the half and we saw him, immediately phone calls, we called each other. But I like Tua. Now, I'm going to say this. With this new coordinator come in, you know, they might use Jalen Hurts another way. So I can't say what will happen. I feel like the quarterback controversy will be struck up this spring. It will be struck up. Someone will be transferring this spring. I just feel that way about that. That's all I got for the situation.
Yeah. All right. And Trey is correct. Coach Trey is correct. We communicated, and I actually told, and I text some people out there, if he come in, they're going to lose. And I'm going to tell you why I said that. I watched Nick Saban. Nick Saban don't take chances. That's why Tua is not quarterbacking and been quarterback all year. Because Nick Saban is a man that know he has one of the greatest defense in the world. What I won't say in the world was in college football. They proved that when they're healthy. You don't want nobody just take chances. Tonga Taga is a risk taker. They need a risk take of somebody to risk take in the second half now. But if he had started that game wouldn't have been called. See, Georgia would have been prepared for him. And I don't put it all on Jalen. I put it on the coaches over there. I put it on Lane Kiffin when he was manipulating him so he don't make mistake as a freshman. I put it on this Bride. They manipulating, won't let him take chances to throw the ball and make mistakes because he know Nick Saban's going to snatch his butt up because he's not a risk taker. Nick is not a risk taker. That's my only concern with this, when that young man would have been starred in any other games. So my thing, it worked out well for him. Yes, there's going to be battle in the spring. But one of the biggest things that Booger McFarland said the other day, he said that, you know, Tugger was going to be the quarterback. Then he came back today because, you know, I do watch the shows on Paul Feinbaum and all that kind of stuff. And I'll mention another show, but this is Talking Sports Plus, greatest show it is. So, but the bottom line is that he said Nick Saban coaches not to make mistakes. And, yes, Tugger gave him a chance to blow it up, but Jalen gave him a chance not to lose. So, I'm just going to put that out there. I don't think Jalen's going to transfer. I don't think Tonga's going to transfer because the only problem I have with this is Tonga's one of the best quarterbacks coming out of the country. Why go to Alabama and sit behind somebody that you may have to sit by him 2 or 3 years? Because you made a choice, so you expect to sit there and work that out. That's just my opinion. He may not be, but it's going to be a package either way it goes. It's better to have that problem that Alabama has than to have only one of them because it hurts them to have one of them. Think about their injuries. Think about you shut one of them down. You got a choice to put somebody. That's the way I see it. I think it's a good problem. It's not a bad. And Nick Saban's not going to let either one of them leave because he know he got the best of two worlds. That's just my opinion, and we can add some thoughts on that.
You know, Coach, I want to say this to you. I see next year, and I may be dreaming, but I see more of a quarterback rotation coming next year and have the best of both worlds on that field next year. That's just what I think.
And I agree with you 100% because as a coach and each one of y'all are coaches, and y'all know that, you would like to be ahead of the ball game with two of the best talents with whatever their specialty is, then to be down with only one of them. And I just think that's my feeling. And then we said something about the offensive coordinator. Y'all know they named him today, Mike Locksley. So you got somebody already on staff going to be the offensive coordinator. So he was what they call it, co-offensive coordinator over the running side of the ball. So my point is now he got the best of both worlds. Now he's going to have a runner and a thrower. So that makes me look good, but he was officially named today. But we can add some more thought to that.
So what would you think? Hello?
Yeah, Coach sounded like he was going out. You can come with me because you can talk. Go ahead. Give your thoughts.
What was Hugh Freeze in Tuscaloosa for? A vacation?
Hugh Freeze was in Tuscaloosa trying to get on to get him a job, not to be a full-time staff person, but to be still around football and around winning. Everybody likes to win.
I know. Everybody likes to win, but Hugh Freeze messed Ole Miss up. Do not bring Hugh Freeze around your program. Hugh Freeze messed Ole Miss up down there with those probation. Ole Miss on probation. Do not bring Hugh Freeze around your program, especially the way the NCAA and the corruption is going out nowadays. Not only in basketball, but we all know corruption happens in football, too. Leave Hugh Freeze where Hugh Freeze is at. Let him go to a small school down somewhere and get a job. If you just want to be around football, it's bad. There's a bad list out of them. Leave him alone. Don't let him come on the coaching staff. Now, as for the new offensive coordinator, we're going to see how he played. We're going to see how he plays. We're going to see how he utilizes Jalen Hurts. We're going to see how he uses Tua. This is going to be a good spring for Alabama. Running back-wise, wide receiver-wise, defensive-wise, deep defensive back-wise, it's going to be a good spring for Alabama. I encourage everybody to go to Auburn, not so much. We already know how that's going to look. Defense is probably going to be about the same. Offense might be a little worse until they get receivers.
Okay. Well, Trey.
Gotcha. Lauren, we can't knock Hugh Freeze. Now, I think they're going to bring him in as an offensive analyst. I think that's what they're looking at him for. You know, Saban is a rehab person, man. He has rehabbed a lot of coaches. A lot of coaches that came through have some faulty background. He's a rehab person. So I think Hugh Freeze will have a piece in his offense that's coming up this year. And honestly, if it's up to me, I would let him put his input because they were a thorn in our side for 2 years when he got the pieces. Three years when he had the pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's awesome, awesome. Let me take this opportunity to let our listeners know that the call-in number is 347-857-4192. And if you want to add to this spirited conversation, just press 1, and I will identify you by your 4 digits of your telephone number, and then you can come on the line and share who you are and where you're calling from. So we do look forward to you to communicating with us, adding to the conversation. But we're going to move on, move our coach's corner to the next topic. And the next topic is what are the pros and cons of outstanding college football players foregoing the draft to return for their senior season? And I want us to kind of have some thought on that and discuss that and have some conversation about that.
Darrell E. here. Coach, you know, okay. I think number one, it's a great idea. I think they should have that degree to follow back on if they go into pro bowl. You know, an injury could cut your career short. We all know that. And if you look at the stats, 60% of NBA players are broke 5 years after retirement, and 78% of NFL players are either bankrupt, unemployed, or divorced 2 years after retirement. So, yeah, that's the pro side of that. Go get that degree, finish out your college education, and have that fallback. That's where I stand on the coach. Back to you.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Lon.
I had this argument about 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't so much about football. It was more about LeVar Ball boys and how they're playing overseas and how they're not in school and stuff like that. And people always say, what about a degree? What about a degree? Yeah, a degree is nice. It's cool. It gets you here and there. But if you're ready, you're ready. Let's put it like that. If you're ready, you're ready. And if you're not, then you're not. So you can always go back to school and get a degree. That's nothing. I mean, these people 40, 50 years old go back to school and get a degree, but that's a tough topic. It's a tough topic.
I'm going to say this to the situation. With football, I think you have a better chance of leaving early than basketball. To me, I think you get lost in the shelf of basketball. It's either you're bigger than everybody and can handle the ball, or, I mean, you never see a small guard come in the NBA and makes an impact on a team. It's always a 6'8", 6'9", guy that can handle the ball, can shoot on the outside. It's a prototype player. Now, as far as the NFL, I think you have a better chance to leave early. And like Coach Daly says, get some money for yourself and your family. Now, it's up to you how long you stay in there with it. And like he said, you're getting divorced and all that carrying on. It's up to you. But I feel like you have a better chance with football rather than basketball. For going your senior season.
Okay. And I guess it go both ways. This discussion have been going on for years after years dealing with, we said basketball, where, you know, before they even required him to get 1 year of post-secondary. Now, they didn't say post-secondary college. They said 1 year of post. So you actually have to sit out 1 year. And I think, as Coach Lauren brought up about the Ball brothers, you know, they forego, one of them foregoing their college career at UCLA. Then the baby young man, the baby boy, he foregoing high school so he can play professional basketball over in Europe. That's great. That's great if that's what they are able to do. But it's not the best way to go. Because as Coach Edwards said, Coach Trey said, that a lot of time when they come out, they get lost in the shuffle. And they can't handle it because a lot of them 18 and 19 years old. And then they get advisors, like the situation that occurred recently with the FBI and the NCAA regarding Chuck Person over there at Auburn, you know, where they're saying that he committed those two young men financially to somebody and they was paid an amount of money. So that's like paying, you no longer have an amateur status, you become a professional at the college level. But it happened not only at Auburn, it happened at other universities. So that's the part with basketball. But with football, I think that if a player, for example, the players at Clemson, they supposed to have been All-Americans, got three or four All-Americans on the offense, on the defensive line. They was causing havoc to to everybody they played until they played Alabama in the second go around, third trilogy. However, two of them are going to the pros. What the only difference in 5 or 10 years is the insurance indemnity policy they can get now. That's a little bit different than it was 10 years ago. So they can stay another year. Now, yes, they can get a degree, and they may not get a degree, but they do think that another year, and I think I go back to those, because those are the players at Clemson that everybody in the country is talking about. Why they come back? If they come back, they're going to be awesome. They're going to have the greatest defense ever. The bottom line is they're coming back. They're going to perform because they know they didn't perform in their last time being seen before the public. So they won't come back and have a good season. That's my opinion, but I do truly believe if the money's there, take the money because you can always come back and get a degree because there's many of them and have not graduated. Some of them, for example, graduated 5 years ago. Joe Willie Namers, you know, came back and graduated probably about 5 or 6 years, and he's been out of school since the 60s. So you can get your degree, but the money won't be always available there for you because you can drop further and further down in the draft, or even you can go up in the draft, but that don't mean you're guaranteed. So this is a great idea. But we're going to move to our next topic, and we want to kind of be a little swift with our topics because I'm looking at our time. This is pertaining. We're going to be talking about the University of Alabama, and I know some people that's listening said, why are you talking about them? But they are the national champion, bottom line, you know. And this question is, why has the University of Alabama been able to win two of the last three national championships, even though they had large turnover in their coaching staff? That meaning they're lacking continuity. But somewhere something is going on. I just want to get some thought from the co-host on regard to why do you think that they continue to be successful and they're changing coaches every year or every 2 years?
Hi, Daryl E. here.
Yes,
well, let me throw something at you. The SEC is the most competitive conference in the country. Let's start off with that. And its coaching turnover reflects that when you look at it, considering the last decade, two national championship winning head coaches, LSU's Les Miles and Auburn's Gene Chizik. Both of them have been fired. And then every SEC team but one has replaced its head coach at least once since 2007, I believe. Five programs, Arkansas, Florida, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt, have done so three-plus times. In total, that's 42 coaches have occupied SEC jobs since, I believe, 2007. Now, once this round of hires is complete, then that's that. But there's only one school that's had one coach in the last 11 years. And what school is that? Alabama.
University of Alabama.
There you go.
Yep.
So when you speak of continuity, you speak of lack of continuity, there you go. And need I say more? Back to you, Coach.
Okay.
Go ahead, Trey.
I feel like it really doesn't matter. Well, it matters. You need a little experience, but if you're getting the best players in the nation, I feel like it makes you look a little better. It would be harder if we had to coach guys up to an extent, and you know we're spoiled as Alabama fans, you know, but we're still fussing at guys that need to be coached up. But I feel like it's easier when you have 4 and 5 stars in positions, and they're coming as a surplus. So if this guy can't get it, I can put another guy in. But I don't think the turnover ratio is as hard as people think, being at a university as of Alabama, as far as like a Arkansas or Mississippi State or Mississippi, where you have 4 and 5-star athletes, but you don't have a lot. I feel like the coaching turnover, I feel like we can give coaches away and bring guys in. Like these guys we're bringing in, I've never heard of in my life. But we will make a name for them, and they will be a big-time coach.
Yep, same thing I was going to say. 5-star guys, they're 5-stars for a reason. Like Coach Ellis said, it really doesn't matter who you bring in. You got 5-star guys going out here that are used to a system that is not only winning, but is a conditioning system, because people don't understand that. Yeah, they're 5-star athletes, but it's the way that they condition themselves, that their strength and conditioning coach, the way they eat, how they take care of their bodies, that plays a big impact in wins and losses. People don't understand that. So what we're talking about, in my opinion, the top nutrition in the nation, the top strength coach in the nation, the top athletes in the nation, that all comes into one. That is strength and conditioning. So it doesn't matter who we get as offensive, defensive coordinator, as long as we're building strength and conditioning, we will have it doesn't matter who we have as a coach, in my opinion.
And I agree with all of y'all. I want you to make sure you and everybody, our listeners, keep in mind that the turnover is because those coaches come in and those coaches have an opportunity to excel because they got the Jimmy and the Joes. People don't realize you can't excel to the highest level if you don't have players that just need the coaching up or developing at the highest level. So what happened is that, Elaine Kiffin come there, restore his career, and he goes to get a head coaching job, but the offense got better. The offense didn't get worse. And it's real important that we keep in mind that so we can make sure that we can respect that process of that program, respect what's going on over there. So it's real exciting. So let's kind of move down to the last topic, and then we'll follow up with some things about the head coaching at the HBCU vacancy. I see Coach Edwards dropped off. He needs to call us back, and we'll get him back on. And the last question, and we're going to spend about 2 or 3 minutes talking about it, should colleges be able, any college at Division I level, be able to declare themselves national champion as University of Central Florida did? And we want to have some discussion on that right quick.
Well, Coach, I guess you can declare yourself to be national champion if that's where you stand. But there are some things in place that makes, I guess, decide who is truly the national champion. And I really don't know how to, I don't even know how to deal with that one.
All right. Coach Lauren?
Yep. I think UCF should call themselves national champions. You want to know why? Because they finished with the best record in the college football standings. They were 12-0, 13-0, undefeated. So, in my opinion, you are the best team because you were undefeated. But you were the best team in your conference, okay? You were the best team when you came to beat all. You were not the best team in the nation, man. You were the best team in the nation. Like I said, they would have put you in the top four. They didn't put you in the top four. Rather, you say that they only put Power 5 in the top four, whatever. But you were not in there. Power 5 or not, you were not in there. They can declare themselves anything. They can go get a trophy made, a plaque made, say we were the national champion. But they weren't, so.
And they also can go and apply to be in the SEC next round. And then let's see what happens.
Yeah.
They'll beat Auburn. Know that.
That's one they can say they have already. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, our topics were really strong topics tonight. And we're really excited when we're talking college football. We're talking basically, yes, we are focusing on historical black colleges and universities, but when the topics are out there and we want to discuss them, that's what we do. So we're going to make sure. Now, the last thing we're going to take a few minutes and talk about before we kind of close out our show, we have about 8 minutes to go. There were some vacancies within the historical black colleges, specifically in the state of Alabama, with Alabama A&M and Alabama State University. As we know, before December, Alabama State decided to take the interim tag off Coach Donald Hill Ely and make him officially a coach, and he was able to sign six young men in the early signing period, which is real good. And I actually have that information that, you know, Southern had 10 to sign, was the highest in the SWAC. But it was four other schools that was able to sign. But there was coaches changes in the SWAC. And you had a coaches change at, as you know, at Alabama State, at Alabama A&M. You had a change at Arkansas Pine Bluff. You had a change in Mississippi Valley. So you had like four or five changes in the SWAC. So that's half of the conference had coaches change. So Alabama State was able to make sure they sign the man they wanted. But Alabama A&M was able to kind of do the same. Can we kind of share, Coach Lauren, can you share any thoughts on who they officially named as head coach?
Hold on 1 second. Let me pull it up. I think it was a good hire. I really do. I think it was a good hire. I think that my opinion, you can't get any worse than you were last year. So you can't get any worse than walking up on you on the football field and you quarterback guys that have made plays for you. You basically changing quarterbacks right before the biggest game. Come on now. That's not going to sit well with anybody. And from what I heard, because I have a couple of friends on the team, you know, the morale in the locker room was going down. You know, you're not going to keep a job when kids don't want to be around you or your program. But Alabama A&M named Cornell Maynard as the head coach for the football team. He's from Hampton College. His record was 20-25. Prior to coming to Hampton, he was the head coach of Winston-Salem State University from 2010-2013. His overall record there was 45-6. His Winston-Salem was the 2011-2012 ACCU National Football Champion. That's far better than whatever they had going on this past year. So I'm excited to see Alabama A&M next fall. I'm excited to see that the Alabama State and Alabama A&M back to the Classic, because now you have two new coaches to a position, and I think the fans will adapt to these two coaches, and I think it's going to be a good year for those two schools, as well as Pine Bluff, Mississippi Valley, as well as those schools right there. It's time for a change at these schools, and I'm glad that administration is coming through with it.
Okay. So, Darryl, you want to add anything to that?
Well, you know, back early in the fall, we were on the talk show talking about how do we get these schools to grow, to be bigger in their sports department? And, you know, it came down, you know, Tony Stallworth said, it, you know, it came down to money. And I think the power moves that they're making now is the beginning process to getting said dollars to the program. And you know, the bigger your dollars for your program, the bigger you are, your program can be, the better your recruits can be. All of these things come into play when you have the power of the dollar. And I think and you may not see the correlation between the two now, but I think some of these schools are starting to open their eyes and says, we need to expand our football program to better grow our schools, to get better recruits, to get better, to get more students, not better students, but more students, expand our school. You know, sports is a big part of Alabama, not the only part, but it is a huge part of Alabama University. It could also be a huge part for A&M and Alabama State as well. And I think now is the time. I think the changes that are coming through now are starting to make these programs more recognizable, getting better coaching, and growing the program. I could be wrong, but that's just my long shot eye view of what I'm seeing right now. Back to you, Coach.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, we had a spirited show tonight, and we want to thank our listeners for listening to us, not tuning in, and hopefully next week you'll just press that button number one, press one, and then you'll be part of the conversation. But we know you was listening, and we thank you for listening tonight, but we're about to close the show. I want both of our co-host who's still on the line, Coach Edwards, had to drop the call and move to doing something else. And I want both of you to just share some things as we close out, and then I'll do the final closing of the show.
Laura, you go first.
I just want to say this. My Alabama Crimson Tide beat Auburn tonight. The score was 76-71. We have one of the best guards in the SEC in Colin Sexton. I'm excited to see Alabama play next weekend when they take on Oklahoma and Trey Jones. Make sure you guys are supporting your local schools as well as Alabama State. They take on Southern this weekend in Southern. The girls play at 3, boys at 5:30. Make sure you turn to WVAS 90.7 WVAS and listen to the game. That's all I had for you.
And, Coach, I want to tell you and Lauren both that they are planning a championship parade, banner and team gear for the UCF Knights, and you should go down and see the national champions. Have a good night, everybody. Daryl's gone.
All right. And I'm going to wrap it up by saying thank each and every one of you callers, especially my co-hosts, Coach Daryl, Coach Lauren, Coach Tremaine, Coach Stallworth, who was not able to make it, but I know he'll be with us. He was here with Spirit. And we said thank you for listening. Just one last thing that we want to share with you. We have about 90 seconds left. On tomorrow night, we will be kicking off a show entitled Real Talk 2. And it's a show that addresses social issues, economic issues, educational issues within our community. And we're going to be aired at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And that's Real Talk 2, hosted by myself. I'm hosting the show. Dr. Loretta D. Smith, my co-host is Coach Lauren, and we'll have a special guest to come in tomorrow night, which is Minister Timothy Kenny. He'll be coming in, sharing some thought as well, talking about his aspiration politically as well as his spiritual aspiration. So we look forward to you listening to us tomorrow night. Call in tomorrow night. Call in number is 347-857-4192. So you have a wonderful night, and we thank you again for listening. Again, thank you, co-host. I love you. We'll talk next Wednesday night. Good night.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
night, and I feel alright. The party's here on the west side, so I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck. Hit the shop cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets, say money, oh we made it. It feels so good.